Good morning. Special welcome to the young men of Valor. They're kind of sitting in this morning. They're skipping their discipleship group to be here this morning. I thank you for that. As you see, the title today is Two Men. That could mean just about anything. We are going to be looking at two men. But the meaning behind this is a little more spiritual than that. I love good stories. You often hear me talk about movies and books and magazine articles. I have one of those minds. I like pictures. And if you can paint me a good picture with words, you've got my attention. If you remember last week in closing, I talked about the movie Parenthood. And I know that there are some people that went home and watched that movie because they let me know. But this was actually from another story, and I'm not going to tell you what because it doesn't matter. But it was a conversation between a frustrated football quarterback and his coach. And he was obviously struggling to perform. He had some mistakes in his past that he just couldn't shake. They haunted him and affected his performance. And in the discussion with his coach, he just finally, out of frustration, asked him, "Why did you choose me?" And, whoa, already? Good grief. The response was, "I look at you and I see two men. The man you are and the man you ought to be." "What'd you do to me, Jim?" "Good grief." "Someday those two will meet. So I look at you and I see two men. The man you are, the man you ought to be, and someday those two will meet." And I experienced that a long time ago. It took me until yesterday to actually get some thoughts together. So bear with me if it seems a little disjointed. But we're going to look at Samson today, and we're going to look at David. These are the two men. There were so many other examples in the Bible, and that's why they're there. I don't know if you know that. That's why they're there. That's why we read them. That's why we study it, so we may see some insight. But we're going to begin in the book of Judges, chapter 13, in the first verse. And we're just going to jump in. It says, "Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. A certain man of Zorah, named Manoah, from the clan of the Danites, had a wife who was sterile and remained childless. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, 'You are sterile and childless.'" I always love that. You know, he takes all the conversation out of it. You don't have to tell. I can give you the answer, but I'm just going to tell you what your problem is and then follow with the answer. Jesus did the same thing. But he said, "You are sterile and childless, but you're going to conceive and have a son. So not just get pregnant, you're actually going to give birth. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink and that you do not eat anything unclean, because you will conceive and give birth to a son. No razor may be used on his head, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, set apart to God from birth, and he will begin the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines." And the story goes on from there. Basically, she ran to tell her husband. And if I was ever to question the validity of the Bible, this is probably where it is, because it says she ran to her husband and told him exactly what took place. I don't know if just an insight. But she did run to her husband, and word for word, she explained to him what had happened and what this man of God said. See, at this time, they didn't even realize it was an angel. Her husband, Manoah, did not either. Manoah prayed to God, though, after hearing this, to send this man back to them to instruct them on raising this child. Though the angel did return, there was no additional instruction. He pretty much repeated what he already said. And we move forward to chapter, same chapter, verses 24 and 25 of Judges 13. says, the woman gave birth to a boy and named him Samson. He grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him while he was in Mahanadan between Zorah and Eshtaol. See, Samson, we're going to kind of gloss over, because, I mean, there's so much about Samson. We're not going to touch that, and even with David, because that's not the point of today's message. So we have Samson here, now that he's has grown. He desires a Philistine woman for a wife. Even though his parents weren't that thrilled about it, he insisted. So they travel down to Timnah to seek this wife for Samson. And the thing is they didn't realize it at this time, as Scripture says, that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines. See, they just thought it was just a young man being foolish, but it was actually God working through Samson still. He marries that Philistine woman. He was a trickster, loved riddles, liked playing pranks, and then over the riddle that he gave them, which I gave to some of the youth leaders last night, and only Aaron knew the answer. But because they couldn't answer it, and they tricked or burdened his wife to cry and wail and moan to get the answer, so finally he gave her the answer, and she went and told him. It kind of ticked him off. So over that riddle, Samson struck down 30 men. And then he swears vengeance on the Philistines, because her father gave his wife to another, because he was kind of mad at her for telling the answer to the riddle. So his father gave her to someone else. And we also know that the 300 of the trick of the 300 foxes that he tied in pairs and then tied torches to their tails and set them loose in the grain fields, burned down their grain. He also went through the town and burned down their stockpiles, and also burned down their olive vineyards. But because of that trick, his wife and her father were put to death by fire by the Philistines. Now again, with the vengeance on his mind, he attacked the Philistines and slaughtered many. Then he retreated to a cave. 3,000, I thought this was funny. It took 3,000 men to get the courage to go and see him at this cave. And they were from Judah, so they weren't even the Philistines. It took 3,000 Judeans to go there and convince him that he needed to make it right over the fear of the Philistines taking it out on Judah. So he agreed, long as they didn't kill him, promised not to kill him. So he went, he was bound, and when they came in contact with the Philistines, it's one of those miracle things, the ropes melted off, and he saw the jawbone of a donkey, picked that up, and went to town on the Philistines. And he slayed thousands of them. It wasn't quite over for him yet, the highs and lows of Samson's life. He had a lust and a weakness for women, as you can find out in the 16th chapter of Judges. But in that same chapter, that's where he happened to meet Delilah. We all know the Samson to Delilah story. And she was able to seduce the truth from him about where he got his strength. His super strength. In that process, we know his head gets shaved. He loses his super strength. The Nazarite vow was now broken. And then they were able to subdue him and take him into captivity. Then they gouged his eyes out and put him into forced labor in the prison. Now we're getting to the point where we all remember Samson at the pillars. I do. I still remember the movie. In Judges 18, verse 28, then Samson prayed to the Lord, O sovereign Lord, remember me. O God, please strengthen me just one more time, and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my eyes. Then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them. his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all of his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed more people when he died than while he lived. And then it says basically his family had gathered up his body and took it back for burial. And they buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol, where his life had begun. See, there is clearly more detail to the life of Samson than chronicled here today. But we're going to take a little overview of Samson. He was from the tribe of Judah. He actually had served as a judge for 7 years over a particular province. Born under Philistine oppression, he was the champion that God sent for deliverance. He was blessed and stirred by God. He decided to get a Philistine bride. On his way there, he kills a lion. We've heard that. He succumbs to the fleshly indulgences. He falls for Delilah, and she tricks him to reveal his secret. His eyes get gouged out, and then he's forced into labor, grinding grain. But he does call out to God for one last feat of strength, and 3,000 Philistines with their rulers die. God's champion has fulfilled his purpose. When Samson was a boy, he was stirred by the Spirit of the Lord. As a grown man, he found trouble in his trickery and riddles. He tried to ignore his trouble with drink, prostitutes, and pranks. As I see it, I think he took his relationship with God just a little too casual. The man he is at this point in his life has not met the man he ought to be. It is a sad story. I mean, he lost his eyes. He broke the Nazarite vow. The champion sent by God was sent to prison to grind grain. Samson was not only taken to the end of himself, but I believe even a little further, just so he would realize God was the ultimate answer. He was always the answer. The man in Samson met the man he ought to be, and it was spectacular. He was God's champion. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, they call this a hall of faith or hall of fame for faith. And it's funny, Samson is in there. In the 32nd through 34th verses of that chapter, it says, "And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions and quenched the fury of flames and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign enemies." This prankster was in the list of those men. We are looking at two men in Scripture today, as I said earlier, merely to draw insight. Clearly, they are not the two men of the title of the message. The two men of the message reside in you, one of the flesh and one of the spirit. Now, some may say, and I've heard it before, it's very interesting, Larry, but God didn't talk to my mom. I wasn't raised Nazarite or anything close to that. I would say to you, just hold your horses, partner. That may or may not be true. But could we just stop for a minute of putting the effort into figuring out how it doesn't directly apply to you? and or how many ways it is different than your life story? Can we agree together today to see how it may actually line up with our lives and how it may be applicable personally? Can we do that? Sure. I knew you could. A little rabbit trail. Do you want to know what the most important thing about your Christian walk is? No? Okay, someone does. All right, well, for you, I will share. I'm going to start with a couple things that isn't. Number one, it's not how much ground is covered. Number two, it's not how much detail is covered. Yes, there does need to be forward motion, and of course, we need to pay attention to the details. When we are all about covering ground, the details and lessons are missed. We know that. When we are too obsessed with the details, every pebble, every crack, every washout, every turn in the trail, we sacrifice what is obvious. There does need to be a balance for sure. But back to the most important thing about your walk with God is it's your commitment to it. D.L. Moody said this, "A man ought to live so that everybody knows he is a Christian, and most of all, his family ought to know." There's a lot of oughts in the story today. We're going to take a look at David. And just so you know, so you're not freaking out, I don't have my normal 55-minute message this morning. David was one of the most prominent figures in history of the world, and certainly among Bible characters. He is the most famous ancestor of Christ, for Jesus is only called the Son of David. His life was a mixture of good and evil, ought versus is. He had noble deeds, he had high aspirations, he had great accomplishments, yet stained with terrible sins. It was early in the, it was an early period of David's life when he was mentioned as a man after God's own heart, and that was mentioned in the 13th chapter of 1 Samuel. His early life was spent on his father's farm near Bethlehem. He was one of eight sons. David had demonstrated great courage while protecting his father's flock. He was divinely chosen to succeed King Saul. In the 16th chapter of 1 Samuel, David was anointed by Samuel. And then we're going to pick up in 1 Samuel chapter 16 in the 6th verse. It says, "When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, 'Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord.' But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.' Then Jesse called Abinadab and had him pass in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, 'The Lord has not chosen this one either.' Jesse then had Shammah pass by, but Samuel said, 'Nor has the Lord chosen this one.' Jesse had seven of his sons pass before Samuel, but Samuel said to him, 'The Lord has not chosen these.' So he asked Jesse, 'Are these all the sons you have?' 'There is still the youngest,' Jesse answered, 'but he is tending the sheep.' Samuel said, 'Send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives.'" Whoop. That would have been a bad jump. There we go. That's pretty humble beginnings for the prominent figure that David was to become. I mean, his dad did not even think of him worthy for consideration. Let's take a look at the man he was. In 1 Samuel 16, 12 through 13, it says, So he sent and had him brought in. He was ruddy, with a fine appearance and handsome features. Then the Lord said, "Rise and anoint him. He is the one." So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came upon David in power. Samuel then went to Ramah. I thought it was interesting myself that he had anointed him in the presence of his brothers. I don't know, maybe they learned something with Joseph. I don't know. So we're going to take a look at the man he ought to be. David becomes a harp player for the king, King Saul, just for a while. Then he returns to his father's farm. His next appearance was a champion for God when David slays Goliath the giant in 1 Samuel chapter 17, beginning in verse 25. And we've all heard this a million times, but I tell you, every time I read it, I love this story. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his father's family from taxes in Israel." Kind of sweet in the pot there a little. My daughter's not too good looking. At least you don't have to pay taxes, I guess. David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" They reported to him what they had been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the man, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." "Now what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" Then he turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the man answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of the Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a boy, and he has been a fighting man from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the lion and the bear, will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on a sword over his tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I am not used to them." So he took them off. Then he took his staff in hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of a shepherd's bag, and, with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Now it gets juicy. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's. And he will give all of you into my hands. As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the scabbard. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. I don't know. There should be chills going up and down our spines. This is definitely a powerful story. This is the man that David ought to be. David is forced to be a fugitive after this. It was a dark period of his life. He was sought by Saul to be killed by Saul. He leads a perilous life of an outlaw. There are some bright spots in this period of his life. In 1 Samuel chapters 24 and 26, David does demonstrate his love for Saul and respect for his God by not killing Saul. After Saul does die, David is anointed king from Hebron. And at the death of Saul's son Ish-bosheth, David becomes king of all Israel. David takes Jerusalem back and also brings back the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. He had many military victories and increased the kingdom boundaries. He strays from the man he ought to be and acts on the man he is carnally. We remember the story of Bathsheba and Uriah and the tragedy that he brought to their lives. And ultimately, Uriah the Hittite's death was all at David's hand. And then later, because of the lack of involvement as a father and a leader, he had to deal with his son Absalom, who rebelled against him. David does make, however, preparations for the temple to be built because God told him he could not be the one to do so. He does pass on to his son Solomon this charge in 1 Kings chapter 2, 1 through 4. It says, when the time drew near for David to die, he gave a charge to Solomon, his son. I am about to go the way of all the earth, he said. So be strong. Show yourself a man and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in his ways and keep his decrees and commands, his laws and requirements, as it is written in the law of Moses, so that you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go, and that the Lord may keep his promise to me. If your descendants watch how they live, and if they walk faithfully before me with all of their heart and soul, you will never fail to have a man on the throne of Israel. And then in 1 Chronicles chapter 29, beginning in verse 26, David, son of Jesse, was king over all of Israel. He ruled over Israel 40 years, 7 in Hebron, and 33 in Jerusalem. He died at a good old age, having enjoyed long life, wealth, and honor. His son Solomon succeeded him as king. could have the music ministry come up, please. Told you it was going to be short. You can see that David, like Samson, died the man he ought to be. Incredible. He also, like us, tussled between the two men, the man among men and the man of God. I would say that because of his relationship, he being a man after God's own heart and all, it is to his credit that he never did become an idolater and that he was loyal to the Lord in his testimony and worship. See, it's not about being perfect. That's not the point. Consider the real tussle in both stories really boils down to vanity, self-indulgence, arrogance, stupidity, convenience, which is the path of least resistance, idleness, and all of its sin. These two men demonstrated the two men principle. Ultimately, here's where I close. Ultimately, there can only be one. There is no place for duality of the heart. You cannot divide your heart. You will only tear it apart trying. Today, you choose who you will serve. What more can Jesus do? Amen.